Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, survivors, caregivers, and all of our followers. We hope that you are enjoying the first Monday of June. Hard to believe we're already this far in the year, but nonetheless, this is a new month with new opportunities and gives us the new privilege to connect with individuals that specialize in neurology, neuropsychology, neurorehabilitation, or to sum it up easier, brain and brain injury care that helps us spread our positive form of hope, inspiration, education, guidance to those that have been touched by a brain injury, as well as awareness and prevention to the general public. Well, tonight, to kick off our first Monday of the June series, we have such an amazing guest who I am very excited to announce and share with everyone the impact that she has. Who I'm referring to is Dr. Perez, who is with the University of Miami Health System, and she is also the Director of Assessment at the Mailman Center for Child Development. She is a pediatric neuropsychologist and a neurorehabilitator with ample training in the neurodevelopment and neurocognitive evaluation, as well as neurorehabilitation of medically complex children and adolescents. Dr. Perez's research focuses primarily on cognitive, emotional, and behavior of pediatric brain injury, as well as cognitive rehabilitation and multicultural neuropsychology. I know that was a lot, but I think it's very important because especially for us that understand about brain injuries, she is helping address how it can not only, of course, happen anyone, anywhere, and at any time, but a label that is not getting the most attention and definitely needs to because they're at risk as well, which is also the child care and the pediatric center. So without further ado, let's get this show started. Dr. Perez, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you so much for such an introduction. Thank you for having me.
No problem, Dr. Perez. Thank you for all you do. And I was trying to sum it up as easy as I could, but it's very inspirational and very powerful what you do and the movement you have behind it.
Thank you. You did quite a fine job.
Thank you, ma'am. So you heard me give as much as I could a brief introduction. But before we start with our series, would you mind giving a little bit more information about yourself?
Sure. Well, like you mentioned, I'm a pediatric neuropsychologist by training. I am currently an assistant professor of pediatrics at the Mailman Center for Child Development at the University of Miami in Miami, Florida. There, I focus on assessment of individuals, in the pediatric population to assess their functioning, who have been referred for a wide range of medical, complex medical, neurodevelopmental, or learning, and other type of problems. And we basically focus on the psychological and neuropsychological assessment of children. You know, some of those are also included in the traumatic brain injury population as well.
Wow. And that's a huge impact and a great amount of resources that you're providing to not only individuals that have been touched by a brain injury, but most importantly, who are also individuals that have been touched, the families.
That's right. And before we continue talking a little bit about like the context of TBI, I think it's important to just further clarify what a pediatric neuropsychologist is. And before I do that, I think I want to just, sort of like clarify also what clinical neuropsychology is, for your audience, because oftentimes we might not be fully aware or we might not have maybe heard the term before. So clinical neuropsychology, it's the branch of psychology that focuses on the understanding about the link between the brain and behavior. Mm-hmm. So for example, we focus on how changes in health of the brain may affect or impact the ability to pay attention, to remember, or to solve problems. And we use that understanding between how someone thinks and acts and how the brain works to diagnose and also treat different brain disorders. So pediatric neuropsychologists are licensed psychologists, but we have training in both clinical psychology and also neuropsychology. Mm. And that special training and how the brain develops is used, or we use it to evaluate and help manage children with like different brain disorders, which may involve, you know, brain injury, whether it's traumatic or acquired. Acquired meaning resulting from, you know, from hypoxia, from infection, a tumor, substance use, neurological diseases, or even pediatric stroke, and also traumatic, you know, of course, the result of trauma. But we also cover like medical disease, so congenital heart defects, cancer, and neurodevelopmental disorders like autism, ADHD, specific learning disorder, intellectual disability, et cetera.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot of content. Wow.
Correct.
You know, and one of the things I wanted to ask, especially getting your personal expertise, opinion on, or fact, not opinion, you know, with, you know, being mainly the pediatric population, how common is the TBI?
Well, that's a really good question. TBI in the pediatric population is actually a global public health problem.
Wow.
You know, most recent numbers from the CDC, and this is dated back in 2020, it was estimating that more than 830,000 pediatric patients with TBI were being seen through the emergency departments throughout the nation. And of this, you know, number of patients that were admitted with TBI, about or approximately 75% of them were classified as having a mild TBI, including concussion, of course. So that's how common we are seeing, you know, TBI impact or be present in our pediatric population in the United States.
Wow. So with, you know, having that being such a global issue, what would you say? I mean, I'm sure there's not one that's more common than the other. Maybe there is. But with children, what would you say that the most common cause of brain injury is?
Sure. So we know that TBI, it's an injury that is caused by a blow, a jolt, or a penetrating object, that it's basically disrupting the normal functioning of the brain. The leading causes for TBI in the United States for children include falls. And I think about close to 50 to 55% of brain injuries in children are caused by falls from objects like stairs or bicycles. There's also unintentional blunt trauma. So about 24% make up, you know, the percentage of children or brain injuries in children that are caused by being hit in the head, either with an object like baseball or, you know, or a soccer ball. We also have the motor vehicle crashes, so motor vehicle accidents, which, by the way, are car accidents are the number one cause of TBI-related deaths in children older than the age of five. And there's also assault. And then assault, by assault, we mean, or I mean physical abuse, which is the number one related, TBI-related death in children age four and younger in the United States.
Wow. Wow. And I think that's also a great explanation because, like you had stated, there are different stages or different causes, if you will, that can result with a brain injury. And it's good to know what are the most common causes, especially in the youth. But another topic I was thinking of when you were describing those different stages, and the most common one is lately, and I'm sure you've also noticed this, there's always been different levels of a brain injury. And even with when a concussion has finally been labeled as a brain injury, sometimes they're labeling it either as concussion or a mild TBI. With your expertise, what determines the severity of a TBI? Or severity?
Right, Yeah, it's a really good question, James. So typically, the approach to determining the severity after an injury include neuroimaging, assessing whether or not there is a presence for any altered consciousness or loss of consciousness. We also assess for the presence of post-traumatic amnesia, and also applying the Glasgow Coma Scale right after the injury has occurred. So those are kind of like the main factors that will contribute to labeling or classifying a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury, as either mild or moderate or severe.
Mm. And I think that's really good to understand that. So for our listeners, I think it's also a great question to help them understand even more. What exactly happens in the brain when it's injured? Because I know how there's different stages or different responses that the individual go through, depending on, of course, what area of the brain was injured, or most importantly, how was the thing. But I think it'd be great for an overall input to really understand what happens to the brain itself when it's injured.
Of course, yeah. And I really like this question, James, because TBI is oftentimes referred to as a silent disability, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not every person, of course, that experiences a traumatic brain injury will show symptoms. Oftentimes, they're not shown immediately. Some time passes by, you know, and after a certain amount of time, the individual starts to show symptoms. But I think that this question can be divided into two different sections. I think the first one is speaking about what happens to the brain at the anatomical level, meaning the brain structure, and the primary effects, you know, on the brain caused by a TBI are going to include like various types of bleeding and tearing forces that may or may not injure like nerve fibers, and that, you know, of course, cause inflammation, metabolic changes, and also brain swelling. There's also called diffuse axonal injury. Mm-hmm. Which is, the abbreviation is DAI, and probably you're probably familiar with it, which is one of the most common types of brain injury. And basically this refers to like the widespread damage of the brain's white matter. So when it comes to the brain, you know, from the anatomical perspective, that's kind of like what happens to the brain when it's injured. But there's also the functional impact of TBI. And there is a plethora of complications that mm-hmm. can come from traumatic brain injuries, right? So like ranging from like minor cognitive delays to debilitating and life-threatening symptoms like seizures and even coma. And some of these can actually follow children and adults for years after the injury. And this is the reason why it's important for the audience and also anyone working with kids who have sustained, or not only with kids, but also with adults who have sustained a brain injury, is to understand that the recovery time can take anywhere from a few weeks to years to come. And this is what it sometimes becomes really tricky in dealing with this patient population, because the impact and the effects of TBI are not visible to the eye. It's not like when you're dealing with an individual who might have had a much more physical disability, when they, you know, unfortunately may have lost a limb or a specific function that is visible to the eye. In this case, these changes or injuries are happening inside the brain, and they're oftentimes not even identified through imaging, but they're more noticeable through the functional impact, which is, you know, kind of like what neuropsychologists focus on when we're evaluating children who have had a medical history with TBI.
Exactly. You know, and I think it's also, that's a great source of multiple examples and helping our audience understand, and just how you labeled it, is it's always a silent epidemic, and what doesn't help, as well as how it's not really addressed properly, but also, and you understand this with your special impact, is an invisible disability. Someone can try to explain it, but again, to the naked eye, you think, okay, well, you look fine and so forth. And a lot of kids do have to battle with this, because even if, let's say, if they do get a brain injury, they do have to adjust to the way that works best for them to really thrive through their long road of recovery journey. But again, when you're looking at from the outside, the individual is acting differently, but might be just going through a tough time. They don't understand what the individual has to battle on a daily basis that has happened because of their brain injury. So with, you know, going off on that topic, I think it'd be really great for our listeners, and especially those caregivers that are out there, can relate to this or getting new perspectives. What would you say how a brain injury really does affect a child or an adolescent in both short and long term? Because there's different scenarios, I'm sure.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's important to also highlight, James, that all types of TBI can seriously affect a child's daily life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes we might be under the wrong impression that, you know, mild TBI or concussion does not really result in significant brain impairment. With, you know, with some of the research has shown that might be true. I mean, there are specific symptoms and long-term sequela, it's unlikely to develop as a result of a mild brain injury. However, that does not mean that there isn't an immediate impact in the child's functioning. Brain injury can cause problems with speaking. It can cause problems with understanding, with movement and mobility. It can also impact how a child thinks, their memory, and even their personality and their mood. You know, some of the long-term effects of traumatic brain injury that we have seen through research include like difficulties in reasoning, language, emotions, and even sensations. There have also been studies that have focused on chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is basically a neurodegenerative disorder associated with like repeated TBIs or when a patient has been exposed to multiple traumatic brain injuries. Which, by the way, the number one risk factor for a traumatic brain injury is having had one in the past. So all of these are among the possible long-term effects. We also know, for example, that children with mild to moderate brain injuries are twice as likely to develop attention problems. And from those children that have severe TBI have found to be five times more likely to have secondary ADHD as a result of traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, the way that TBI impacts children, you know, it can impact the children's cognitive functioning and how they're thinking, in their memory, in their learning. It can also impact their social functioning because it can impact their personality, their mood, depending, of course, on the localization of the injury, can also impact some really important skills, which are the executive function skills that at a young age are still developing. And whenever the brain suffers such an impact that interferes with that normal development, with that typical development, that can also, you know, create problems in how a child may be able to control their behavior, may be able to inhibit their behavior, may be able to shift between tasks, and they might be able to have difficulty planning, organizing the information. They might also have difficulty regulating their emotions and regulating their behavior. So there are a lot of like short-term but also long-term difficulties that can be seen, or sequela that can be seen from TBI. But I think it's also important to talk about not only the impact in the child, but also the impact it has in the family, right?
Very.
Because the role of the family environment and TBI, and this is beyond the impact that it has also like academically speaking, right? So we talked about cognition, we talked about social skills, we talked about the executive function and how they're basically navigating, you know, the world. There's also, you know, possibly an impact on how they're thinking and their memory, and that's also going to impact how they learn. So you might see also difficulties with attention and concentration and distractibility in the classroom, which in turn will impact their learning and their academic functioning. But there's also this other component, which is the role of the family environment in the traumatic brain injury recovery. And we have had like colleagues at different institutions within the United States, like for example in the Cincinnati Children's Hospital, that, you know, they carried out, you know, some really, really important research regarding the impact of TBI on children. And they followed them for about like maybe 7 years. And some of the findings really shed light on the role of parenting practices on home environment, on the recovery of TBI. So I think it's important to also highlight that, you know, the environment in which children are cared for after an injury such as traumatic as a TBI is mm-hmm. really important, and it also has a direct impact in the recovery.
You know, and I think it's very good that you mentioned that, not only, of course, the different aspects, but of course, how it is both short and long-term changing, not only to the individual that has been living, has been chosen, to, unfortunately, to live with the brain injury, but it does also affect the family because everyone's life has to short-term and long-term change. And as you stated, with individuals, especially the adolescent and children, going through a brain injury, whether it's mild or severe, is they're not able to really achieve very important things. And most importantly, during their time of education, they have a difficulty achieving the national minimum standards for literacy, numeracy assessments, and most importantly, sometimes they are unable to complete school because, again, their brain has been rewired, so the way that they learn is not as easy because, once again, on the outside, they look, we can word it as okay or average.
As typically functioning, correct.
Yeah.
And that's where the whole silent disability terminology emerged from. And you bring a really good point, and it's true. And this is why not only focusing on assessment of TBI is important, but also focusing on rehabilitation efforts for TBI is important, right? And the type of rehabilitation methods that are most appropriate for children depending and adults, depending on the type of injury, determining whether or not there is a skill that can be rehabilitated or if there is a skill that would need for compensation strategies to be developed. And this is where it's, you know, the child is part of a system, right? It's not only the TBI and the severity, it's also the environment in which the child is developing. It's also the family access to resources. It's also the adherence to the different treatments and the participation in treatment. It's also the understanding of the individuals around the child. And I keep on saying child because I work with children, but really this information, you know, pertains to any individual with a history of TBI.
Exactly.
It's also the understanding that, you know, of all individuals around a patient with a history of TBI about their ongoing difficulties, current mm-hmm. difficulties as they experience the injury, but mm-hmm. also, you know, the changes that might be observed or sometimes not observed, but that may be observed functionally as they recover, you know, throughout mm-hmm. the recovery process. Children with severe TBI, for example, show fewer symptoms if they grow up in like optimal family environments, where children with mild injuries sometimes display persistent symptoms if they come from a socially disadvantaged or chaotic family. So that tells you a lot, right, about the, you know, the importance and the significant impact that having the appropriate environment creates for the recovery of these children and also adults.
You know, I'm glad not only that you explained more in depth about that, especially I'd like to highlight how even though you do work with children, the information you're sharing is not only for them. It's really helping individuals understand that brain injuries do affect everyone, and it is very possible, and like you mentioned earlier, a global situation where kids are sustaining brain injuries. But again, you're giving the proper tools, guidance, and hope for others that have been touched by a brain injury to understand that, hey, they're not the only one. This is an issue that everyone has happened to deal with, but also helping caregivers and also parents or future parents understand that, hey, this is not just only a certain age bracket that this can happen with. You're given proper tools, and I think it's also great how with their proper guidance that you're giving, it's helping education and hope and also, most importantly, awareness and prevention. As you mentioned earlier with, you know, parents, I think it's great also having you on here. What type of resources would you recommend that are available for children with TBI?
Sure. Well, there are plenty. Some of the ones that we refer to are the Brain Injury Association, which really offers like many helpful resources on traumatic brain injury, from educational guides to like support groups. And you can find help like directly on their website. They also, and this is where I really like the most, they also offer a list of state rehabilitation programs. So depending on the state that individuals live in, they can actually look for local rehabilitation facilities and services. I also very frequently refer to the Office of Acquired Brain Injury that also helps patients with traumatic brain injury and caregivers like learn more about TBI. And I like this organization because it also raises awareness about brain injuries and how to prevent them, which I think is also really important. I also like Brainline. I don't know if you're familiar with it, James, but it's a national like multimedia project, which offers like information and support to anyone whose life has been affected by brain injury. And it's not only the patient, it's also like the families and the environment that we were talking about earlier. So it's like for people with brain injury, their families, their friends, and also for professionals who work, you know, who work with this patient population. It offers like military specific information and resources on traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder as well. So this is specifically for like veterans, you know, service members and military families as well. That what I like about this specific resources that they have, a Brainline for kids. So they also provide multiple resources for children. So it's a kind of like a comprehensive website for families to access information on TBI and also PTSD. There's also the CDC pediatric mild traumatic brain injury guideline that is also published on the CDC website. The heads up to brain injury awareness is another resource that I really enjoy and often recommend. And heads up to parents as well. It's another great resource, which, by the way, I think it just brings everything back to what you were discussing earlier regarding the impact that it has on families and how we know through research that families who have experienced a traumatic brain injury are likely to experience long-term disruption in family functioning. We know this. And that, you know, oftentimes when compared to families who have not experienced traumatic brain injury, you know, some of these families are unable sometimes to attain a level of control and the level of functioning over the life because of traumatic brain injury. So the idea is also to provide resources that are able to, you know, to inform these families, provide additional guide to these families and how to better navigate TBI, how to better understand it, how to better understand how it's manifesting in their own family. And also it's equally important to highlight how brain injury treatment and rehabilitation should always include a family level intervention to target functioning for families that are also affected by pediatric TBI. So not just treat the patient in the context of the TBI, but in the context of the family function. And their family units, and how the TBI can be impacting the family as well, because everything is going to contribute to the recovery of that patient.
Exactly. Wow. That's a great amount of not only, of course, resources, but the conversation that you've been privileging us with is very helpful. Once again, it's not only helping others understand how a brain injury can happen to anyone, anytime, anywhere, at any age, but also with helping others understand, okay, look, this is how a child goes through a brain injury. These are some of the difficulties they could have, short and long term. These are how it also, and I like how we address this on multiple steps, how it's not just the child that gets touched by the brain injury. The whole family has to change what they properly have the ability to, because as we both know, when individuals are touched with a brain injury, the family, of course, tries its best to give them the proper attention, care, and shifts that they need for them to thrive during recovery. But unfortunately, sometimes the individuals cannot change that much because of their career life. They get an open window for a certain amount of times, but depending on how the individual's level of brain injury is, it's going to need more care than just a short-term visit. And when I'm referring to a short-term visit, and I'm sure you've heard this analogy before, but it helps others understand about a brain injury. When you go through a brain injury, it's not like when you break a bone, how the doctor will give you a calendar. saying, okay, by this many weeks, this step will happen. By this many weeks, this step will happen. And by this week or this few weeks after, you're going to be able to do basically what you were before. With a brain injury, there's a start, but there is no finish because everyone's brain is different. Everyone's injury is different. Everyone's journey is different. Even if it's the same area of the brain or similar to how it was sustained, there is no finish line with a brain injury. I have met individuals that sustained theirs 20, 30, or even 50 years ago to this date, and they're still having changes happen that were not happening before.
Correct. And you, I think you described it beautifully. There are no two TBIs that are alike. And I think it's person specific. It manifests different. It's dependent on a wide range of factors. In pediatric TBI, for instance, it depends on the age of the child at the time of injury. It depends on the level of schooling at the time of injury. It depends on access to resources, access to intervention immediately after. It depends on the level of severity. So there are so many factors that can dictate whether that injury it can lead to long-term or short-term sequela, but also how that sequela can impact the child functionally, right? So we know through research and that, of course, age is a protective factor because, of course, we know the brain is malleable. We know that neuroplasticity takes place at an early stage in brain development, and because of that there are there is the hope, right, of that neuroplasticity compensating and working through so that these different brain regions can find their way and reconnect and creating or giving space for these new skills to emerge as well. While all of that is true, right, we also now know that there are certain types of injuries that may happen in certain regions of the brain that if they do occur at a later time, even though the brain has already developed, there are specific skills that might not be fully developed or may have fully emerged, and that if a brain injury was to happen during that development, it will halt development of those skills. Mm-hmm. Possibly also creating, the possibility of those skills not developing or needing, compensation strategies. Because of course, an injury that might be severe enough to cause brain tissue damage and damage to the neuropathways can also lead to loss or death of neurons. And when this happens, then these pathways might not be able to reconnect. So we used to think that age was a protective factor. We now know that it's not just age. It is also the time of development in which the child is at the time of injury and the severity of the injury and also the age of the child, the combination of all of these different factors. To really give us a good picture of what the outcome of the injury will be and the outlook of the patient in terms of prognosis would be.
Exactly, and that's very important, and that's a great description. Wow. Dr. Perez, it's phenomenal what you do, your passion behind it, and most importantly, the changes that you're positively impacting, not only, of course, the community, but also anyone that gets the opportunity to be near you or most importantly, read about the books and publications you participated in. Wow.
Thank you so much for the invitation, James. I really enjoyed our conversation. I really enjoyed talking about traumatic brain injury in the pediatric population. It's one of my passions and it's also a topic that I hope to continue to contribute to and to continue working for this population as well.
I know you will, and you'll continue to be a huge impact and a great value to not only, of course, the community, but most importantly, brain injury awareness, prevention, and guidance. If any of our followers want to try to get in touch with you, would it be okay if we share them, some of the links we have where they can learn more about you, or do you have a better way for them to reach out to you? If it's a
sure,
available, of course.
Absolutely, yes. You can most definitely share some of the links. that will take them directly to my academic profile. I can also be reached through email at pkp22@mia.med.edu.
Okay, perfect. We just want to make sure it was okay with you. We didn't want to do them like, okay, whoa, what's this going on? But I think this can be very helpful, again, for parents that either want to learn more of prevention or they might be going through some of these scenarios and really want the proper guidance. So, Dr. Perez, thank you once again for all you do and the honor to be in communication with you, and I look forward to doing some more work together. And next time I'm down in Miami, stop by your office to meet you in person.
Absolutely. It's been my honor. Thank you so much for the invitation, James.
No problem. Thank you, ma'am. Have a great night.
You too.
Wow, everyone. What an amazing segment that was to kick off our June series. As you heard, Dr. Perez gave some key elements and proper guidance to understand not only what determines a TBI, but also how it happens inside the brain, inside the skull, also how of a global issue it is with children and the common causes. If you would like to learn more, as you heard Dr. Perez state, you can learn more from her, her resources, or of course, reach out to her. Please contact us and we'd be happy to share that, or you heard her list her email. Thank you for all of you for tuning in to our positive form of hope, inspiration, education, awareness, and prevention for those that have been touched by a brain injury, but also helping us finally do what has been needed to be done for generations in the silence. One love.